It wasn't that long ago that the idea of a drone wasn't even a thing. The closest we had was mini helicopters that, for three easy payments of $9.95, your kids could fly around the house for 15 minutes at a time. And now, drones are everywhere. It's a stable enough technology that today's guest, Bronwyn Morgan, started a new business venture. Founder of Zeo Air, we talk about the capabilities that you can do with drone technology and how they can drastically help with challenges in the telecom, energy, oil, gas, wind, geospatial, and government sectors. Plus, they're still fun to fly around. Join us on today's episode and learn more about the tech behind the toys. Check out Zeo Air at xeoair.com for more info. And as always, enjoy the listen. Hey, you're on the hot mic at Arch DevOps with Fritz. I'm here today with Bronwyn Morgan, founder of Zeo Air. How you doing today, Ms. Bronwyn?
I am doing fantastic for a Thursday in October.
Yes. You know, that sounds like something I would say. Did you steal that line from me? You've been reading out of my playbook. No, these days have just right. Zoomed by. I can remember thinking back in August, I was like, oh, it's April, and it's not really. And September just went zooming by, and now How far are we into October? We're still in the
first. I think it's the 8th or something.
Yeah. Right. So it's right. Thursday. It's Blursday. Well, we're here. And if anything, this whole pandemic time dilation issue has just taught us, you know, to pay attention and spend the time on the things that are really important. So hopefully the listeners at home aren't getting beat down and feeling, oh, mopey, but hey, you're here with us and we're going to have a good talk. So tell us a little bit about Zeo Air. You started it up, and what's it all about? What do you guys do there?
Well, you know, we're a startup, so we are doing some and looking to do a lot more, but Zeo is an outsourced AI-based drone services data analytics company with a plan to be adding autonomous operations soon. So we really are, you know, an outsourced capability and service for companies specifically in areas such as telecom, oil and gas, civil infrastructure, energy, which would be wind and solar, catastrophe and disaster, and government functions, as well as environmental observation, who are in need of professional drone services and the data processing and analytics that comes along with that versus having to do all of that in-house.
Yeah, it is it's not a saturated market. I know there are lots of drones out there, but to have somebody that comes along that specializes in that, I don't know that everybody realizes the importance of having that technology at your disposal. And I was thinking before our podcast, I was like, you know, it wasn't that too long ago that the closest thing we had to a drone was those little copter things with the two propellers. They would sell them. You'd see them on late night commercials. And now there's just drones everywhere. They're just ubiquitous. Yes. You know, I just saw a video on TikTok the other day. Yeah. There's like 3,000 of them flying around in a formation. And it's like, we've really come a long way. Is that your fault? Is that why so many drones are out there? No?
No. We're trying to do it responsibly and safely.
We're not just going to fly them all around people's houses and stuff. We're the good guys. Okay.
That's not a part of the rules.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, because I'm curious, like what can you do with drone technology that you wouldn't have been able to prior? I mean, it's other than flying around and taking pictures, like what's the big advantage that you have?
Well, that's a great question. That's the whole value proposition for drones and our ability to, like, we're in the inspection and mapping business. So that's what we do. And of course, you know, delivery's coming online, but with, you know, smaller drones, 55 pounds and under, the ability to get in and out of situations that have posed either a very expensive proposition in the past to observe and inspect and map things with manned aircraft has now reduced the time to what could have been a day, half day, or hours to 30 minutes an hour max, depending on the complexity of the project. Mm-hmm. So it certainly has reduced the time component to get and collect data. The other part of it is safety, human safety factor. So versus having to climb wind turbines and or telecom towers, broadcast towers, buildings, you're able to now get up and down relatively quickly with the level of detail based on the type of sensors that we'd be using, and you know, save people's lives potentially, as well as liability for some kind of human hazard. So that makes a big difference. And then now with the sophistication of sensors as well as data analytics, the industry is starting to see the ability to capture underground, underwater, on the ground, anomalies that in the past, you know, took a lot of time to kind of stitch together the imagery, whether it's, you know, video, so whether it's photogrammetric or whether it's geospatial data, and then pull that together quickly to form an analysis, whether it's predictive analytics, prescriptive analytics, but really being able to tell real time, agriculturally and otherwise, what's happening in a particular territory, geography, or space.
Okay. Well, I really resonate with the height factor because I am terribly afraid of heights. And like, I'll freak out if I see a video of somebody climbing a radio tower. It's like, yeah, but you can send the drone up there. Yeah. It's like, send the drone up there to change the light bulb. Come on. I don't want to go up there. I don't care if you pay me hazard pay or not.
That's coming next. That would be, you know, drone plus robotics. Right now we can at least tell you the problems. But that probably is the evolution of the equipment.
Yeah. I can just picture it. You just fly it up there and you'd be like, hey, light bulb's burned out. And then
version
two is this hand that just like unscrews it. And
absolutely.
It's just a mannequin hand dangling from the bottom. I love it.
Absolutely.
Shoot. Well, so what do people come to you about usually if they're going to ring your bell and say, hey, we heard you guys do things with drones. Like, can you help us solve X problem? Like, what's a common problem that people come to?
A great deal of our work has been in post-catastrophe and disaster, where, you know, we've been brought in, pretty much almost close to real time after an incident, and having to inspect critical infrastructure to determine its safety and whether there's a need to evacuate, how long this structure will be solid and firm. What needs to happen next in terms of repair and maintenance. And then on, post disaster, working with a municipality to determine beach erosion. Like, so over time, if we know that there's going to be a steady issue with hurricanes or tornadoes or, significant weather events that over time are going to erode a certain part of a beach, that has a huge impact on revenue, land use, safety. So, that's just one example of why we'd be called in. And as you start to look at these trends over time, it starts to tell a really, fascinating story that allows the customer or the client in this instance to make some critical decisions now versus having to be reactionary because they didn't have, the opportunity to have that fore planning and data in front of them.
So it's a mix of being responsive to disasters, like while they're happening, like how do we respond to this right now? But also kind of a preventative maintenance thing, like, you guys might have a landslide coming pretty soon here because we just picked this up and it didn't look like this last year, and just kind of diff the pictures and say, oh, there's a lot of land being lost here. We need to move.
Absolutely.
So, awesome.
It has significant impact on the bottom line. And when you look at, roadways and safety over time, if you can see a large percent of geography that covers, let's say, a roadway, you can start to determine where you're going to deploy assets for repair, the budget for that, because at some point that's going to be degraded and that's going to cause a huge issue, especially around large metropolitan areas. So that, again, back to infrastructure, safety and security and asset management.
Okay. When you're talking about metropolitan areas, like, this kind of makes me wonder if this technology was around like a long time ago, what things would have been like. And I think the most catastrophic metropolitan thing that happened, my mind goes back to 9/11, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So if you had drones like what you have now back then, what do you think it would have been like? What do you think history would have said about the situation?
That is a really good question. The incident, so first of all, you know, you've got military use of drones, which we obviously are civilians and commercial operations, but, you know, are there detection sensors that are placed? Now, drones can only stay up for so long, but, you know, this is probably a combination of multiple tools, satellites, other detection capabilities that would have alerted, you know, the tower that, hey, something's gone awry, mm-hmm. that would then have alerted others in the military to act sooner. But as it relates to the disaster itself, because everything happened so incredibly fast, the need in that instance for autonomous drone ops in that environment could have been useful. You could have had some drones that were innocently deployed before the second crash that actually, you know, had a chance to kind of fly up and check out structural damage and recognize that, you know, this is going to go, that we're about to lose this building immediately. And perhaps, you know, evacuation of the areas around the complex could have taken place. But that's in hindsight. Yeah. People were trapped. It's very difficult to determine that and how to get them out of the building. And then the, you know, the second aircraft, if I remember correctly, came within less than 30 minutes, I believe. And so again, and the buildings came down so incredibly fast. So, you know, having drones that could possibly assess while it's happening, getting, you know, collecting more real-time forensics. And then when it comes to rescue, mm-hmm. And recovery, being able to help spot and identify where people were on the ground, where people were still in the building, where assets around public safety and emergency management were deployed. Those things kind of working in coordination together potentially could have saved some lives, but that's there's a lot that goes into that equation that you know I'm leaving out for sure. But those are some potential ways that it could perhaps be deployed in a metropolitan area, specifically a location like Manhattan, where the density, population density is so incredibly tight. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that because, I mean, I guess, yeah, hindsight's always going to be 20/20. You know, we can't go back and change the past, but, right. You know, when it comes to notable things, it's like, well, what would we have done? And it kind of mm-hmm. paints the picture for what's possible these days. You know, I would hate for there to be another 9/11, like, yeah. God forbid, right? But mm-hmm. we have a lot of technology. We have a lot of tricks up our sleeve now, right. that we can address things a lot quicker. I've got mm-hmm. a few more questions for you and a little bit about just kind of the mechanics of the business, why you started it, you know, what the playing field is like, because this is kind of a new area for a lot of people. But let's take a short break for a sponsor message, and we'll be right back in just a little bit. All righty, and we're back. So, you know, we were talking about before the break, all kinds of things about the drone space, what you can do, what it helps prevent, how it addresses catastrophes right now, and how it gets in front of things in like a preventative maintenance type, you know, want to make sure a catastrophe doesn't happen, let's get out in front of it. And there's some really cool things. So I wanted to pivot just a little bit and talk about the mechanics of the business. So do you feel that this is still sort of is it kind of like a greenfield thing, or is the market just saturated? Like there's drone companies out the wazoo. Like, do you have a lot of competition, or are you pretty much trailblazing? What's it like?
Well, you know, this industry is very new still. You know, we are bound by regulation and equipment capability, and, mm-hmm. and regulation is morphing along with the business use cases. So, you know, hats off to the FAA for running parallel with the vision of a more ubiquitous UAV operations. there's lots of folks in this space. There are some companies that are, you know, a little bit bigger. They've been around for a while. Some corporate entities have gotten into this business from a service perspective. And then you have all this fragmentation with other companies, some that provide services only, you know, we just fly and here's the data. You have companies that are doing data processing only in this geospatial space. And you've got the hardware manufacturers, you've got software manufacturers, you've got folks doing work around unmanned traffic management. So there are a lot of disparate pieces of this industry. There's still a lot of room for growth and opportunity. We're just scratching the surface. I think eventually, you know, some, like in everything, you know, certain companies will fall out, because to keep pace will require a significant amount of investment and know-how. So really to be a solid service provider, either internally or as a third, you know, a third party that actually is outsourced. But yeah, there's just tons of opportunity domestically, and internationally. So, we're just at the beginning.
Yeah, I hear you. And I think with being at the beginning, a trap that a lot of companies will fall into, and parenthetically, I see this happen a lot with a lot of different sectors, is, hey, it's new. There's not really any rule to this. Like, we could figure this out, you know? And it's like, well, I mean, guys, if you've got a really deep need that you think is coming, it's probably better to like outsource this to a group that really understands that sector deeply and can do amazing things already, where you're just kind of fumbling around trying to figure things out. I mean, I have one of those little bitty drones, like for home use, and it's only a few ounces. I crash that thing into walls all the time, and I get it tangled up in my girl's hair, and it's like the propellers break, and I'm like, I am not ready to be a drone pilot. I would destroy like $100 drone. Some people are like, well, I could drive an RC car. I could drive a drone. It's like, it's totally different.
Yeah, it is a little different. Yeah. It's a lot different.
Do you fly them around for fun? Like, do you take your lunch break and just like zoom around, sit at the window and buzz your
employees? I wish I could. I don't get to fly as much as I used to. I'm more on the phone and on the computer and doing great and amazing things like sitting, you know, with you. But when I do get a chance to fly, it is, you know, I do it just to kind of keep myself trained up. But yeah, it can be incredibly fun, especially if you're following and understand the regulations and know where to fly, how to fly. And you will crash some equipment. So I always suggest to people, start off small, but, you know, register your drone if it's over, you know, a half pound with the FAA. Understand how high you can fly. All of that is at the FAA drone zone. But you can really enjoy, especially with, you know, with your kids or in places that are safe and small drones. I really encourage that. I have, you know, I've got my own RC car and boat, and I've enjoyed those for a long time, but it is very different, especially if you're doing it professionally. That carries on a completely different weight to it.
Well, yeah, because you could charge people to fly drones for them. Like, yes, that as a hobbyist.
right.
I love it. Well, what's the hardest part about what you do? Because you're in a role, you're a business owner, you're doing cool things, but like, what's the hardest part about all this?
Oh, you know, as a startup founder, it's, you know, it's all, especially during a pandemic, if you just want to add on another layer of complexity, it is, you know, you've got to scale your business. Mm-hmm. You've got to raise money. You've got to secure clients. You've got to go out there and do the work and generate revenue. And that's the hustle. That is the hard part. And it, you know, it takes a lot of tenacity, and you've got to continue to generate leads and, you know, seek out opportunities, but you've got to be able to stay the course, especially when, you know, the world has changed. Mm-hmm. And then I think the third leg of that is finding really good talent. There is not only the drone pilots that we need to be sophisticated and capable and have good, solid experience and skills, because not everybody can just go fly anything. You know, there are certain needs for certain types of equipment, certain types of drones, certain types of sensors. certain level of experience from your logbook, insurance coverage, and the know-how of what it is you're flying. So if you're flying over a nuclear reactor for a utility company, checking and inspecting for any kind of leaks or other issues, or if you're flying for an agricultural company, you really need to know what you're doing and have the equipment that you need to make it happen. Mm-hmm. So while the entry point for a single drone pilot operating, you know, one or two drones, maybe a couple of people, you know, the entry cost isn't all that great. As you start to add on capabilities and equipment, the price tag starts to go up because mm-hmm. it becomes a more lofty venture.
Yeah. Yeah, the stock model of certain hardware is good entry, but then that's where it adds up after a while, is all little accessorizing. Yes. It's the accessorizing that causes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in light of the pandemic, here's what I see, and I'm sure you've seen this too, where certain sectors, certain jobs, roles, that kind of thing, they're sort of viewed as, it's kind of a luxury item. Like, mm-hmm. we don't really need that. Like, we're trying to focus on keeping the lights on. So right. have you had to push back against that mindset, or are you guys essential? Like, is drone piloting essential? Like, have you had to hit that hurdle or?
Yeah. It depends. It depends on the sector. What I found is that based on the verticals that we focus on, it's pretty much been business as usual. At the beginning of the pandemic, if I could try to put a pin drop on that, I'm going to say March, April. Mm-hmm. We were in discussions with companies like utilities who were having issues with surge, just because everybody was at home and there was a huge demand at hospitals. And so there was a concern about the electrical grid. So you wanted to make sure that they were well maintained, because that was the last thing that we needed to go down, because that was communications, that was everything. And with mm-hmm. people now being at home versus being in the office, the demand structure of use, you know, it changed. And so we noticed that. But then over time, everything kind of normal, you know, the normalcy kind of came back into the flow of the trends. And then there were a lot of people who were displaced, working from home, restructuring companies, trying to figure out how they're going to move forward. And so what we kind of found now is that people are starting to kind of come back out, but there are companies who were doing a lot of upstream innovation and investment, and they pulled that money back. They were just like, we're just going to hold with what we have, what we have, and make that work. Because that money had to be funneled to the bottom line, because they were having such a significant loss or potential loss of revenue that expanding into drone ops, urban air mobility, new tech, not every company, but many of them had to kind of change their whole strategy. But I think mm-hmm. we're going to crawl out of that as we get into 2021. We sure hope so.
I think we will. I think we mm-hmm. will. And it's kind of funny, but I came into 2020 thinking, all right, this is the year. Exciting times are going to happen. I mean, I wasn't wrong, but it wasn't what I expected. I'm really hoping mm-hmm. that 2021 is like, no, mm-hmm. seriously, this is the year. So
right, right.
Oh, my goodness. Like, I can't picture Absolutely. It getting any worse, you know?
Don't say it out loud.
I'm
Don't
trying not to.
Don't say it out loud.
I mean, go to jinx
every
it.
Every day when I wake up, I'm just like, what now? You know, this morning there's news about things that are going on in the world, and it's how many more days do we have left in this year? I'm hoping we can get past this and move on, because this has been a wake up call.
Yeah. Well, it has been a wake up call. And I think more than anything, everybody, not just business owners, you know, we have fostered just an amazing amount of resiliency. Like,
yes.
we're not talking about, oh, let's talk about resiliency, like on social media, on LinkedIn or whatever. I mean, capital R resiliency. It is hard.
Yes.
And the people
yes.
that come out the other side, they're just going to be tough. You're going to yeah. be tough, Bronwyn. And you're, mm-hmm. I think you're one of them. You're one of them that's going to come out
sure,
tough.
I sure hope so.
You need to know so. Well, how would people find you? So people are listening and they're like,
yeah.
drones are cool. How would they reach out to you and engage a conversation?
Certainly. You can find us at zoair.com, X-E-O-A-I-R.com. Mm-hmm. You can find us on Twitter at AirZeo and on Instagram at ZeoAir. On LinkedIn, I'm there. The company is there. And then, of course, there's always info at zoair.com as well if you wanted to get some more information and connect with us. But that would be those would be the optimal ways to connect.
Nice. Well, I'll be sure to put that in the show notes for you. This is fun.
Absolutely.
I never know going into these what I'm going to learn, but just hearing what you've got going on, it's like, well, yeah, you can make a business out of that and you're doing awesome things. I may have to invite myself out and see if I could like safely fly a drone and practice a little bit, like keep it about 6 inches off the ground. So if I crash it, it's like, you did $1.50 worth of damage, Fritz. Well done. You know,
let's plan that before it gets cold. That sounds fantastic.
That would be fun. Well, it's a pleasure meeting with you. And I'm glad you that too. We've got some mutual friends that are also podcast hosts and guests. Christy yes. Maxfield, if you're listening, you know, we're talking about you and look forward to getting this pushed up and get your word out there. All right. Did you hear this episode and go, wow, I'm a founder and all my friends keep telling me I should get on a podcast? Would I be a fit? Yes. Yes, you would. Every single person who steps out of their comfort zone to build their dream has an amazing story to share. And this is the platform for you to do that. If you want to talk about your dream, what led you to start your endeavor, what successes you've had or challenges you've been pitted against, this is the podcast for you. So head on over to archdevops.com/podcast to find out how to get on. And also check out our free tip sheets on guesting or even hosting your own podcast. This is Fritz, your host, hoping to meet you on the other side of the hot mic at ArchDevOps.